Welcome to the More Than Books podcast. Welcome back, everybody, after our month-long hiatus. And we have a special treat for all of you. Today I am joined with Joel. Say hi, Joel.
Hello, Joel.
And hey. Colin Kem, one of our esteemed colleagues here at the Freeman Logier Library.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to the supply closet to do the podcast with you.
This is the studio.
Yeah, Colin. This is the studio / supply closet.
Right.
Do not point out the man behind the curtain, Joel. This is now recording. We're in the bunker studio now, far 100 miles below the earth. Anyway, so today we are going to be looking at, is essentially referred to as the technological dark arts, or realistically it's more or less how to stay safe on them internets.
So back in June, Colin presented a workshop here at Bellevue University in the library titled Defense Against the Dark Arts, Defending Privacy in a Post-Privacy Age. And the workshop really focused on online privacy, and it was really well received. So that's why we brought Colin in for this episode. We thought it'd be a timely topic and something that a lot of people would be interested in.
It's always, I feel like internet security is always a timely topic. It has no festival or season. It is a perennial issue in our day and age.
Well, especially right now, with every other week, it seems like there's a credit card numbers hacked or bank accounts hacked and identity theft rampant.
This will date the episode, but I think, what was it, like Yahoo had something going on? Somebody got some hacks.
And I know Windows 10 was just released, and a lot of people have been kind of up in arms about some of their security features, which they do give you the option of turning them off, but there's a lot of sending, not necessarily keyloggers, but sending information to Microsoft about your general browsing habits that they use to improve the experience, or so they claim.
Improve. That's always
very
the
Google argument.
Yeah.
There's the old chestnut of improving the experience.
While watching everything you do. It's that old saying, you know, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product.
Always.
Yeah.
Always and forever.
So, mm-hmm. Windows 10 is a free upgrade for everybody on 7 and 8. They got to be making their money somehow.
Yeah. So, right. So Colin, what kind of got you interested in doing this presentation, Defense Against the Dark Arts, Defending Privacy in a Post-Privacy Age?
I don't know if there's any one thing that got me interested. Maybe kind of the catalyst for me was last year when I saw the film Citizen Four in theaters, which was a documentary about the whole Snowden scandal leaks. But internet privacy has been a big concern of mine for a while, and it was maybe one of the things that kept me off of sites like Facebook and Twitter and all of those things for so long, just due to personal concern.
Sure. So. And you have a Facebook and Twitter?
I don't have a Twitter.
Okay.
No one needs to listen to me on Twitter.
I have a similar opinion of Twitter. The facey space is enough for me. For my age, young whippersnappers, we'll leave the Twitter to them.
I like Twitter for breaking news, and that's about it, because
yeah, it has its it, yeah. Like all of them, they have their uses,
right?
In the right hands.
I quote unquote follow people on Twitter, but without having an actual Twitter account, I just check in on their Twitter pages occasionally and read their most recent things, because it is a good source of information depending on what kind of information you're looking for.
Yeah. So I know here in the library, if there's a database outage or something like that, or something is behaving weirdly that should be working, Twitter is one of the first places I go just to see if anybody else is having the same issue and reporting it to ProQuest or EBSCO, which happens fairly often.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Twitter has... I've stayed off of it. Anyway, all of these, like I said, are tools, when used properly, are good sources of information. But when used for evil, perhaps by a nefarious group of wizards... such as those who practice in the dark arts.
So that's good tie in there.
Thank you. Excellent transition. That perhaps they could be used for nefarious things. So I must ask, because it's entitled Defense Against the Dark Arts, why is your presentation named that?
What are the dark arts?
Yeah. Well, first off, curses. That's always a thing.
Well, and Harry Potter's still popular, and I wanted to get seats filled in my presentation.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's all marketing. Okay.
Hey,
it was a marketing push.
It's what works.
But again, this kind of ties back into Snowden again. He had given a South by Southwest talk, and he called kind of internet privacy issues the dark arts. He kind of couched it all together as the dark arts. And I thought that was a pretty good way of putting it, so I stole it. And I think I credited it to him in the presentation, but, yeah.
No, that's fair. I mean, that's what we would, we all in the library, steal as often as we can. And we all, I think anyone needs all the help they can get. Especially when we're trying to reach out to people, we want something that's familiar that's going to get them interested.
So Edward Snowden's a pretty controversial figure. I know that documentary you mentioned, Citizen Four, was an Oscar nominee February?
Really?
Remember the Oscars?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, but I'm way behind on Oscars. I'm more...
That was like 6 months ago, man.
I'm more concerned about how the Hugos are going to shape out. But FYI, calling back, by the time this airs, it'll probably drop, and we're going to see what happens with that. But that's a little callback. Anyway, what's some of the stuff that Edward Snowden kind of recommends that people do? I know that in that, isn't there a scene in that documentary where he looks at a payphone and he's like, they're listening. Who? The government.
Yeah, it's, I don't know if it was a payphone. It was the phone in his hotel room. An alarm goes off on it for some reason or another. And he is upset about it because, probably understandably by that point, he's a little paranoid.
Sure.
And I think that's the main thrust of his argument, is that paranoia is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, obviously, don't be so paranoid to the point that you start doing yourself and others harm, but every time you get online, you should exercise a certain degree of paranoia and just self-awareness of your actions online.
Now, why is that? What?
It's because you're being watched online.
I was going to say,
who's watching us?
For Snowden, he's mostly concerned with governmental.
Right.
That has to deal with, the NSA spying on, collecting data from citizens.
Right. But everyone collects data from citizens. So the NSA does it. Google does it. I'm looking at a laptop net right now, and Google is the homepage on it. Every time you run a Google search, Google is capturing that data, where you are, what you're searching for, what results you click on, all that good stuff. And, for them, it's so that they can better advertise to you, and Google makes some money off of advertisements, obviously.
Too often, I think we forget, Google is a company.
Right.
They make a lot of money.
Yes, they do.
Off of something.
And Google has so many great services that it's easy to think of Google as being kind of our pal.
Yeah.
But they probably aren't really our
pal. With the colors of the logo and everything, they just give this friendly...
Right.
We're Google. It's your friend.
It's unfortunate. It's sad, but I kind of do consider them my pal.
Yeah. I think Google is my friend.
I use a lot of Google tools.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that I don't put on the internet in general, but definitely my calendar, that stuff is all recorded on my Google calendar. All my contacts from my phone are connected to that.
And a lot of it is that Google's just developed so many great tools. There are search engines out there that don't track your searches, but using them is not nearly the fulfilling, quick, easy experience that using the Google search engine is. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Well, yeah, just thinking about all the information Google has on me. I have an Android phone. I use Google Maps. Google knows where I live. Google knows where I work. Google knows who I talk to. All of my friends and family. They have my email. They have everything. My entire they know what I search for. They know what I browse. I use their web browser.
More than likely, they probably know what you buy.
Yeah.
They know what you buy. They
to some extent.
What your politics are, probably to some extent, too.
Yeah. So,
they know my interests.
Yep, exactly.
They probably know me better than I know me.
What they don't know, someone else knows. And then they can buy that info, I guess, if they wanted to. But they probably don't have to. It's a waiting game.
So, let me ask. Does this matter? Do I care if they have all that data? Why should I care that they have all that data on the server?
I think a lot of people don't care.
I would agree.
And that was kind of a further, I guess you could call it a catalyst for me, was the realization that people don't really care about their privacy online anymore. And I don't think it's because they've thought it through thoroughly and thought, oh yeah, this is completely acceptable to me, I'm not going to care about it anymore. I think it's because they haven't thought through it thoroughly. They haven't really considered all of the important day-to-day things that they do online, and what it means that all of those important things that they do online aren't private.
And we're ragging on Google quite a bit, but not to say they're not, they are an easy target because they're so big. Mm-hmm. They're very clearly not the only ones that do this.
Right.
I mean, we got to think Microsoft has probably been doing this for a long time through Internet Explorer. There's no way that they weren't.
They're Windows.
Yeah, they're Windows. We use their operating system.
Yeah. Every major service you use that's connected to the Internet does it in some way, shape, or form. I mean, if you have a video game console from the current generation in your home, it's probably doing the same thing. So
yeah, constantly sending information. So
and we've started hooking up cameras and microphones and everything to all of our devices, and
it seemed the silliest thing to me. Like, let's put in this very highly programmable device that can be rooted into from far away. It can be controlled. That has a camera that's very good and a microphone that is always listening to you.
And, you know, we've talked about the Internet of Things in the past before. Now we're starting to do that with our refrigerators and our coffee pots and our light bulbs.
Our cars especially.
There was some stories, like, last week about hackers being able to remotely turn off a car.
Yeah, straight up turn it off.
Yep.
That, I mean, that's you're driving to work, you're on the interstate, you're going 70 miles an hour, and all of a sudden your car just shuts off, you're probably going to get in a wreck. And someone could do this remotely. They could be just driving by, and they're like, I want to get around this person, I will cause their car to turn off, and then I'll zip around him like a jerk.
Well, I don't think it's that easy. When I read the story, they have to actually have access to the car's computer beforehand and change some things. And then they can do it remotely. But,
so it's a tool for murder. Yeah, that's fair.
It's a little scary, though. Everything is connected, and, you know, we don't necessarily think about the implications of that.
Right.
I've heard of stories about people getting, like, baby monitors that are connected to the internet. So, it's, you know, it's really cool that you can pull your phone out and check to see, you know, if your child is still asleep or not. But they come with default passwords, and people don't change their passwords, and people can get into your baby monitor and creepily watch your house.
Yes, password password baby dance.
Yeah, you got to change your passwords.
Yeah, passwords, I mean, that's such just an old sticking point at this point, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's,
people have been saying, you've got to have better passwords for years. But that's something that, again, people don't really care about because they don't want to have a big, long password. They want to have something quick and easy so that they can get into their computer very quickly and very easily.
Right.
And a lot of the times, they just have their browser remember all their passwords for them anyways, which is something else I'm not necessarily a fan of.
Well, it's problematic because you fall into the problem that the browser saves it, you're not typing it in. So if you get some sort of malware that is able to view what you're typing and record that, you aren't doing that necessarily, but then it's possible or in potential, or there is the potential that it could get hacked and then all your passwords are taken. Oftentimes I feel like with this stuff, you are not in a good situation one way or the other.
Yeah, it's balancing convenience and privacy. And, you know, theoretically, all those passwords should be encrypted on the server side and never actually accessed by anybody other than, you know, computer programs. But who knows?
Yeah.
So, you know.
So sorry.
And that's kind of one of my big points is I think another major reason people just don't care is because it is more convenient not to care. It's easier to use all the tools that Google provides you because they're more convenient. It's easier to use 1234 as a password because it's more convenient. It's easier to
use the same password across multiple accounts. Yeah, exactly. So you can remember it.
That's the password on my matched luggage.
Yeah. It's all a convenience thing, and unfortunately, being safe on the internet is not convenient. It requires work
to be safe on the internet. So then what is the work? What are some of the tools, the spells, wizards and wands?
What are the biggest threats, first off?
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. What do you think the biggest threats are on the internet right now?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of threat we're talking about. If we're talking about threats to privacy, it's just the fact that it's so easy for, I don't want to say like shadowy organizations, because that sounds a little silly, but it's so easy for corporations to know who you are and for them to sell that information to other parties, like advertisers. So that's either something that bugs you, or it's something that doesn't really bug you. And I think a lot of people, it doesn't really bug them, because maybe they just don't know better, or they like targeted ads.
I don't know anyone that likes targeted ads.
There's something that can be convenient about targeted ads.
It can be convenient, especially, if you're Amazonaholic like I am.
Yeah, me too.
But the thing that people should care about is that, or the thing that usually makes people care about internet privacy and internet safety is the threat of cyber criminals. And obviously cyber criminals are becoming a bigger and bigger thing with, I think we mentioned earlier, the mass hacks of some, maybe it was even before we started recording, I don't remember anymore, the mass hacks of various user databases from certain companies.
It's all over the place.
Yeah.
Nice. Just ne'er-do-wells lying in wait in dark alleys of the internet with spells and wizards and wands.
And it happens more and more frequently.
And it can be very easy to accidentally download malware to your computer that may include extra programs that are spying on you. It may include keyloggers that are recording actually your keyboard strokes and sending them back to a server. You can find passwords. You can get everything with a keylogger, basically.
Right. Passwords, content of your email, documents that you're composing, searches that you're running, anything that requires keyboard input, someone can read later. So,
bank account information, social security numbers,
credit card numbers.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how do we protect against these dark arts or these threats?
It takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of learning how to use some tools that you may not be familiar with. Like just an example of keyloggers, there are programs, safe programs, that you can download and install on your computer. And what they do is they encrypt your keystrokes so that if there were a keylogger attached to your machine, whether physically or as a piece of software, when the person who installed that keylogger would go back and look at those logs after the fact, it would just look like nonsense to them, because this program that you've installed has scrambled your keystrokes for you. And there's no one program that blocks every avenue that someone could take to get your information. It's a matter of going out and finding the programs and training yourself to use the tools. And there's a myriad of programs and a myriad of tools that you need to install, learn how to use, train yourself on, and just some habits that maybe need to be changed as well. So,
okay. Well, what are some of your favorite tools or tools that you use on a daily basis to kind of protect yourself?
Tools that I use on a daily basis. The keylogger tool that I use specifically is called Xamana Anti-Logger. That is installed on all my PCs, and I'm a fan of it. Another big thing that helps, generally speaking, helps the security of your PC is keeping all of the programs on your computer up to date. Obviously, occasionally a new patch for a program will come out and it will actually make your PC more vulnerable, but that's the exception rather than the rule in most cases.
They call those the Java updates.
Exactly.
Oh, that was... Yeah, for those who don't know, it was... What was it? Like, maybe a month ago, there was a Java update that had a huge zero-day exploit in it, essentially, from the get-go. Viruses were... An open door was allowed into your computer, and there was zero support for Flash, and I think you had to manually update Chrome to their patched version of Flash support in order for it to work. It was a huge headache.
If you can get by without having Java on your computer, do it.
Yeah. So
and Flash.
It's so hard.
It is really hard.
There's so much stuff that uses it. I mean, HTML5, which is essentially the coding language that all the websites are made with nowadays, is the new standard that all the websites are encoded in, does a ton of stuff way, way better, or at least to the same extent as Flash. The problem is that not all, especially older devices, don't all read it, so there's issues there with websites working on older devices. And plus, Flash is still used on old websites, so still needs to be support for it.
Mm-hmm. There is a great tool, though. I mean, I tell people, you have to update all of your programs, and I don't just mean, like, running Windows updates. I mean stuff like your Flash, your archival programs that zip documents for you, your Word processing programs, all that good stuff. Anything that makes use of the internet on your PC, which these days is basically any program you could care to install. The tool I like is called Nynite. It's N-I-N-I-T-E.
Yep.
And it's a handy little website that you go to, and it's a huge list of commonly installed programs, and you just check which programs you have that you want to keep up to date, and it gives you a custom installer, and you just run that, once a week, or set your computer up to automatically run Nynite for you, and it will just install those programs, the latest versions of those programs, fuss-free.
I did use Nynite to install all my web browsers and just basic programs I use when I built my computer last month, so I haven't set it up to run automatically every few weeks or months, but...
Yeah, that's... I think that you could have it do that, or you could just run it manually. You just gotta remember
to do it.
But I know that most of the newer web browsers update themselves automatically. Mm-hmm. Programs like Steam updates itself automatically. The things that are constantly connected to the internet, but it seems to be a lot of the older programs that don't. Yeah.
Well, they weren't necessarily programmed with having that connectivity the whole time, which in many ways is good because it's, especially if you're on some sort of bandwidth limit for your device or computer through your internet provider, that could be an issue there too, but...
Isn't it the future? Why do we still have bandwidth limits?
We did an episode on that, Joel.
I know.
I believe one of our very early, I think the second episode was on trying to get rid of those limitations, and that's still being fought over right now as well. So that's a callback to episode 2.
This is going to turn into a best of the More Than Books podcast.
We are focused solely on Colin's information.
Yes.
So we have Nynite.
So those are a couple of tools.
Yeah, we have Nynite to update everything, and then we have that keyboard program.
Right.
I can't remember what it's called.
Zamana Anti-Logger, something like that.
And we will have links to all of these places in the liner notes or show notes. I always say liner notes. This isn't an album, but...
it could be.
We could make an album. We could record an album in this closet.
We do have a studio now.
This is a studio, Colin... Please.
Instead of being like a bedroom album, it'll be a closet album.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So, okay.
So, other good tools. web browsers. I like Chrome a lot. If you're still using Internet Explorer, please stop using Internet Explorer.
Explorer is not the browser on Windows 10.
Yeah.
No, what's the new one?
Microsoft Edge.
Edge.
It's a very edgy name.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
It's a nice browser. I've enjoyed using it so far.
I've actually heard good things.
Windows 10?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm upgrading. This weekend, I'm upgrading my laptop. So
you guys can be my guinea pigs.
It has Windows 8. I think if you have Windows 8, let's just say this right now. If you have Windows 8, go ahead and just go to 10.
See, I'm on 7 still. So.
See, and that's my desktop is 7, mm-hmm. and I have a rough time upgrading there.
Say wait a few months for the bugs to get worked out and then update. Cause
I'll wait until the day before the free offer expires, and then I'll ask you guys how it's been.
Welcome,
treated.
Yeah, you and a million people. You got to remember that they only have so much like throughput for downloads. So maybe download the ISO early and burn it to a disk.
That's an idea.
Just because you're going to run into issues.
That's an idea.
I actually have heard from tech buddies that work in kind of in that field of IT help that as long as you don't really have much in the way of like printers or anything that requires a lot of custom drivers, you're probably going to be fine to update. But in a business setting, it's a bad idea right now.
You're talking about browsers. What are your suggestions for
other than Chrome? Is there anything else that you use?
Well, is there any settings or any particular way to use the browsers to maximize
your
privacy?
There are some settings and some plugins that I'm a fan of. I mean, beyond Chrome, I also like Firefox, and I always have Chrome and Firefox installed so that if one website works on one or doesn't work on one, chances are pretty good it's going to work fine on the other. And for the super paranoid people out there, there's always the option of Tor, which is a lesser-known web browser. But
that was actually
some security measures when you're
designed by the U.S. government, wasn't it, Tor?
I'm not sure of all the details, but I think that might have been the case. I would be interested in reading up on the history of Tor a bit
it's
more.
It's the sneaky browser.
Yeah.
It's the
right.
Unfortunately used for good and evil,
mm-hmm.
just like wizards and spells. I'm just going to keep harping on that.
But insofar as plugins are concerned, there's a few that I like. HTTPS Everywhere, I think, is a pretty fantastic one.
Yep.
I've noticed a lot of newer browsers do this automatically, where if there's an HTTPS version of a website, it'll automatically point you to that rather than the HTTP version. But if you are in an older browser, HTTPS Everywhere is pretty nice. And for those who don't know, HTTPS is Hypertext Transfer Protocol Secure, and obviously HTTP is
just vanilla,
but without security.
Just vanilla, without
right.
that security.
Does that add like a layer of encryption to?
That's exactly what it
yeah.
does. It just means that all of your communication with that particular website should be secure.
And I know that. Well, I'm looking at Google right now, and it is HTTPS now, and
mm-hmm.
I think most major websites are. Or websites that deal with secure data. So, I mean, if you're banking and it's not on an HTTPS website, you should probably request that they update their website.
And maybe not go there.
Yeah. Find a new bank.
Of course, if my friends that work in the tech field, if they had any say in this, they deal almost entirely with banks.
Yeah.
That most of the malware that they are, I mean, they're tech help for companies, but the majority of the companies they work for are banks because banks are constantly attacked by stuff. And it's not like the bank goes out of its way to, actually, they kind of do. Their employees typically will do something dumb. And it's that dumbness that will get them in trouble. And then they have to call and pay for someone to come in and remove some keylogger, or the new thing is a crypto wall. which is ransomware. So if you've ever, any and all ransomware.
Yeah.
Basically, it will encrypt your computer and make you pay ransom in order to get the information unencrypted.
I haven't seen any ransomware in a long time. It's kind of a blast from the past. Is it making a comeback?
It's in a big and heavy way. Jeez. So this is probably something that, I mean, the thing is it's just been recently. I mean, it's been slowly trickling out, but there's a new crypto wall, 3.0, that's been hitting a lot of banks lately. And it's messy, messy stuff because it doesn't just encrypt all the files. It will work as a worm as well, so it'll travel to all the drives connected to that computer. Anything that's connected to that computer, really, it will encrypt everything, and then it will start to, as long as it's connected to the internet, it will start to parcel that information out. So it doesn't just go in there and lock everything, it also steals it.
You should read the novel Reamed by Neal Stephenson, because this is a big plot point in that novel. We do have it at the Bellevue University Library now.
Read every Neal Stephenson novel.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. If you're interested in cyber thrillers, Neal Stephenson is fantastic.
Yep.
So that's just a recommendation if you're interested in more on that topic.
Snow Crash.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah, everyone seems to say that it's, if you wanted to get into kind of that cyber thriller. I have heard cyberpunk. The book is very cyberpunk.
Snow Crash is cyberpunk, but Reamed is not cyberpunk. Reamed is a lot more modern day.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's more of a thriller than like a fantasy, which I think Snow Crash is more of a cyber fantasy.
That's fair.
Yeah. That was a off topic. sort of off topic, but you know.
So we can talk about whatever.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
So what about, like, incognito mode on browsers or private browsing? Does that actually...
What exactly does that do?
What incognito mode does is it prevents the browser from saving local data to your PC.
All right. So it's still sending data back to Google if I'm using incognito mode.
Right. It should be, yes.
Yeah.
Incognito mode is more if you're on a public PC or you share a PC with someone and you don't want them knowing what you're doing online. So whether you're banking or, you know, you're doing some personal research, it's not a bad idea to switch over into incognito mode, as Google calls it.
It has many names.
Yeah. The other web browsers have the same functionality, it's just under a different name.
Private browsing.
I think that's kind of the typical wording.
So if you're looking for a birthday or anniversary gift for your significant other, you should use that.
Yeah, anytime you don't want your computer to record what you're doing and not go into your browsing history. Otherwise, you got to go to and clear your browsing history, which is a pain to do all the time.
Right. It does it automatically for you, basically. I tend to just always leave it on. So it's just easier that way.
Are there any other browser settings that are worth knowing about for making sure that the information stays private? Getting attacked by Halloween decorations in here.
There definitely are. I mean, if we're just talking about browsing, you know, in a public setting where you're on a shared PC with other people, obviously you don't want the browser to remember your passwords for you.
Sure.
That's a big thing, and again, that's a setting that you can usually get into from the browser settings. So there's password saving, and autofill is maybe something else that you'd want to disable if you're on a public PC. The last thing that you can do is you can tell your browser to not accept third-party cookies. That does break some websites.
And they get upset.
Especially some of our databases at the library here. If your browser is not accepting cookies, the database will not function as it is supposed to function. But that is something else that you could disable, and it could improve your privacy online. So
I really wanted to make a joke about cookies, but I couldn't think of a good one. So This is my comment.
So you're going to make a meta joke about... I should make a joke about cookies.
My stomach is accepting cookies right now.
Oh, boy. Ugh.
That's kind of a meta non-joke, really. Yeah. That's,
anti-joke?
Yeah, there's a bit of an anti-joke.
Yeah.
So what are other... I mean, browser protection is all well and good, but most people, I mean, other than their behavior, which in and of itself is something they should be aware of,
right.
You know, this I think is hammered from the get-go, but we should say it here. Don't open anything you don't know about. Don't go to anywhere that seems sketchy, and don't talk to strangers.
Yeah.
Don't download programs from download.com.
Yeah. If you click on a download link and it takes you to another website to download it,
Not going to probably be a good place. Yeah. Unless you absolutely are certain that it is a safe website.
Right.
When you're installing something, don't just blindly click the next or I agree button. Read it to make sure that what you're doing is installing the right thing.
Yes, exactly.
That's how they get you all those ridiculous toolbars.
A big one that I don't see people do often enough is when you receive a shortened link from someone that, you know, you think is probably trustworthy, but, you know, you don't really know them personally or anything. A good idea is to take that shortened link, and I'm talking about a link that's been shortened via Bitly or some other link shortening service, and take it to a, I don't know if there's a technical term for it, I call them a link lengthener, where it does the opposite of what Bitly does. You put in a shortened link, and it spits out the full link, the full URL for you to look at, as well as a preview of the page, so that you can actually see what the page looks like before you go and give it a visit.
Well, it might not even be that person that's sending that Bitly link. It could be someone whose computer has been hijacked by some sort of malware and is sending out those links to people
to
get more people.
I think everyone at least one point in their lives has received an email from a friend or acquaintance that was not from their friend or acquaintance.
Yeah, very clearly not them.
Yeah.
So you just need to exercise caution as to what you click on, and before you click on something, see if you can figure out where it's going to take you.
Always, yeah, and if you get an email from a company asking to reset your password or log in here, double check to make sure that email is actually from that company.
Yes. Criminals, I guess we can call them, because they are. They especially like to pretend that they are your bank, and they might go to your bank's website and get your bank's logo, copy some of the language that your bank uses, and then format that in an email and send it to you. And the only way you're going to know better is if you check to see who the email came from. And I think people are pretty good at doing this with regular physical junk mail that comes to them.
Anymore, yeah.
Anymore, it's a pretty routine thing for people to be able to look at a piece of junk mail, a piece of physical junk mail, and figure out that they're trying to get your personal information, or it's a scam, or they're trying to sell you something. And I don't think people are quite as adept at that with email messages.
Well, sooner or later, that email from the Prince of Nigeria is going to turn out to be real, and I don't want to miss out on that.
I don't even know where to start with that one, Joel.
Just saying.
If something is too good to be true, it's probably not true.
It's common sense. Just because it's the internet doesn't mean you automatically get a free pass and just do whatever.
You're telling me that Bill Gates is not giving away his fortune to the first 100 people to respond to
that email
I got?
That was the dumbest. Well, it was the Facebook thing is what I recall. Him holding up a sign. People, you have to remember, image editing software is free and available to everybody. He could be holding up anything.
And it's powerful image editing software that's free and available to everyone, too.
Does amazing stuff that looks real. Question what you're looking at before you look at, or before you respond to something like that. Please.
I know we all work in a library, but we can't stress enough to don't believe anything you read on the internet without verifying it.
Maybe check a couple other places.
Yeah.
A couple of their sources, if you will.
Give it to Google. I know we were kind of ragging on Google earlier, but Google it. Go to, is it Snopes.com?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Do a little bit do a little bit of research before you believe things that come your way. I've seen people, and this is a pretty innocent example, but people use articles from the satirical news source, The Onion, as
sources of truth.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous
to support their arguments, which is a hilarious thing.
Yeah, people, The Onion, a fake site. Please come on. It's written in a satirical voice.
And like, The Onion isn't the only fake site out there.
No.
So some people know The Onion's a fake site and then accept a source from another site that's just as fake or maybe very, very, very biased. So.
Well, there are sites out there now that almost try to manipulate this on purpose. Mm-hmm. They, in the very, very fine print, will say they're a satirical website.
Right.
But their stories are very... They're not written in a satirical way. They're written in a way that... they're trying to trick people.
Right.
So it goes
viral. And they might be about current events.
Yeah.
Or people that are big in the news.
It's just to drive clicks, to sell ads. Yeah.
It's all clickbait.
Which is the scourge of my Facebook feed.
Well, it's the scourge of everyone's internet experience is clickbait anymore. Which, for those that don't know, for those listening, clickbait is essentially anything that is sensational or sounds too good to be true or... is instructional in some fashion.
You'll never believe what happens.
You'll never,
next.
Yes.
Yeah, it uses that same language. You'll never believe. You'll cry when you see this.
All that stuff is referred to often as clickbait. It wants you to click, so you go to that site, so they get a hit on their ad counter, and they can charge somebody some money.
Yeah. That's basically the style everybody writes in on the internet now. And it just,
because it's the style of writing that gets hits, and it's so sad. But going back a little bit, and this is something that's kind of off to the side, just last night a friend of mine told me that there was a gentleman who was a gentleman or lady, we don't know for sure, who was impersonating Target on Facebook.
I saw this.
I hope you did. It was very humorous. Yeah. And in some ways, I feel a little bad. Essentially, what they did is Target has changed out a bunch of toys that were gender-focused and made the information on them gender-neutral. And this definitely angered some of its customers. Which neither here nor there, and we're not going to get into the politics of that fact. But then a person went onto Facebook, created a fake account, and then was answering their grievances. Yeah.
They were claiming to be Target customer service.
Yes.
And they had their profile image was the Target logo.
Yeah.
And they were responding to all the people negatively posting on Target's wall as if they were Target.
Yeah, it was... Yes, exactly. And they were very... And there were instances, they were very dismissive. I mean, there were instances where it was very clearly not going to be someone from Target who was saying these things. But there were a couple times where the person was begging, like, someone who was threatening to send information to corporate to not do it. Like, please don't, I'm going to lose my job. I'm like, this is something that an employee would do. And it was not... In some ways, it isn't necessarily malicious. Target made their decision to do that, and it's up to them to do what they want to do as far as any sort of backlash in that decision. But it was super funny. And so it's hard to say when someone pulls the wool over someone's eyes like that and they get these sort of reactions to not laugh. And it just goes to show, maybe check and see how many Target customer service Facebook pages exist, and maybe call some, check around.
Yeah.
This is a perfect example of maybe double check your sources.
Well, another similar thing but that I've noticed is, lately there's been this trend of having basically mobs on the internet attacking people for various reasons or other things.
Right,
but,
I believe the term is doxing.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard of it, and it is essentially that where personal information is given out about an individual, and then they are waylaid, either electronically or face to face sometimes by individuals.
Sometimes trolls will infiltrate this too, like just trying to be funny or trying to stir drama, trying to make drama. And I've seen multiple times where people have Photoshopped tweets claiming that someone said something really offensive when they didn't, even though it'll have the picture and the Twitter handle, and it looks legit.
Looks like a real screen cap.
And they share these on message boards, basically trying to instigate people to attack this person.
Yeah.
So it's similar, but a little bit darker side to what you're saying
there. And a more innocent example would be people purposely putting false information on Wikipedia. Doesn't always get caught right away. But again, you've got to watch what content you're consuming online, and you've got to be able to figure it out independently using the tools that you have access to, that what you are consuming is based in reality.
Yeah, I mean, then this gets all down to what we in the tech field like to, or not technology field, in the information technology field like to refer to as information literacy. And libraries are all huge advocates of that. And it's a honk-chew boring moment to talk about information literacy, because it's like, yeah, we get it. Don't go to stupid places on the internet, double-check your stuff. But we keep talking about it because it continues to be an issue. And so these are prime examples of people who allow themselves, because they haven't taken the time to understand how to find the information that seems correct. We can't even, I would say anymore, you have to have you have to have a certain level of faith that what you are reading is coming from reliable sources. And that's it. You can't necessarily say, this is 100% absolutely true, what I am reading, whether it be on the internet or be in a book. So it just comes down to, like, this sounds very reasonable. There are multiple sources that state this fact. I'm going to have to make the assumption that this is most likely true. Super non-committal, but that therein lies the problem. And I think a lot of educating yourself and staying safe on the internet has a lot to do with being a information literate person.
And, I mean, like Jake mentioned, information literacy is something that libraries are very passionate about. It's kind of the basis of really what makes a library a library in some ways. But libraries are also very passionate about privacy.
Yeah.
If you go to the ALA's website, that's the American Library Association's website, you can read all sorts of great, fantastic, almost essay pieces that they have published about how important privacy is for library users.
Yeah, I know that we did use the ALA website too when we were working on our podcast about net neutrality.
We absolutely did.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I mean, it's not really surprising that libraries support, because it really has to do with freedom of information and personal privacy, and having control over your own information too, which is where the privacy comes from.
Privacy, and then protecting yourself against these dark art wizards on the internet. And we're very concerned about it, because for information to be truly free and open, it also has to have a certain level of, for lack of a better term, protection. Not to say that we're not the key holders, you know, to information any longer. We were, perhaps, libraries in general were perhaps at one time, but we still have to advocate for people to understand what information is and what they're looking at.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what it comes down to is we think of libraries, at least people in libraries think of libraries as being kind of these like bastions of like free speech and free association. You know, you can come into a library and inquire about whatever it is and get information on that subject. You can't have free speech without privacy. You can't have free association without privacy. You can't have open inquiry without privacy. So that's why privacy is important to us. It should be important to you.
So, Colin, if you feel like your computer may already be breached or may have something installed on it, or that your privacy is already in peril, what can you do? What type of regular maintenance can you do to your computer to ensure that it stays clean?
Regular maintenance. One of the things we've already mentioned is make sure your software is updated. Another thing you can do is regularly clean your computer, and I don't mean like with a can of compressed air. I mean with several anti-malware programs, not just one, because one program won't catch everything. Some kind of antivirus program, as well as stuff like CCleaner, which is a very popular program and might be like my favorite program ever devised by anyone.
It works
extremely well. And what CCleaner does is it just cleans up all of the, there are technical terms for it, but just the gunk on your computer.
Programs and software that's not being utilized.
Right.
Pieces of data that are essentially detritus and are detrimental to your computer's overall informational health.
Of that may be, local files that websites put on your PC as well. So that's where the privacy and protecting yourself comes into it. CCleaner doesn't just help your computer to run better, it actually could potentially help you as well. So
yeah, it'll get rid of cookies, it'll get rid of temporary internet files, and it'll even get rid of some old system files that are no longer in use.
Yes.
That can help clean up. I mean, any of those files could be a potential inflection point for malware to spread. So,
ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to use.
Yeah.
those are the big things, I think, is if you do regular maintenance on your computer. So what I do is every week I have Nynite run automatically and it updates all my software for me, the software that I use the most. And then once a month, I run some anti-malware software on my computer and run CCleaner on my computer. And
when you always have some sort of antivirus software running.
Right. You should always have antivirus software running. If you don't want to pay for antivirus software, Microsoft offers free antivirus software.
Yeah, use Windows Defender. It actually works pretty well, as long as you keep the definitions up to date. Run your Windows updates.
Exactly.
Well, I guess it's time for final thoughts.
Yeah.
On privacy and our topic at hand.
So, Joel, what's your final thoughts?
I think that a lot of this information is... It's a lot more in-depth than a lot of the things that I even do. Like, I often will run, Malwarebytes and CCleaner and use incognito browsing at times. But, I admittedly could do better about not storing all my passwords in the browser. I have gotten a little bit better. I'm using a password management software now to keep track of my passwords. I don't even know half of my passwords myself anymore. My passwords are, 20 characters long and random gibberish.
Which is the safest way anymore.
And they're all different. So I have an app on my phone and on my desktop that I use to manage it. And that helps tremendously. I can just pop it open and copy and paste it in. But that doesn't really protect against, when I have all my passwords stored in the browser. If someone were to come use my computer, they'd probably be able to get into anything, though my computer is locked, so you have to know the password to get into the computer.
These are all things that you can do.
Always lock your computer. Always lock your phone. That's the best way to keep that data secure.
Yeah.
There are people out there that will use your information. They will steal...
The stolen identity is...
That's the biggest thing right now.
It happens for a reason, because it's not that hard. And your personal wealth has value to these people, and they can take it and then utilize it. And then it falls to credit card companies who are insured by the governments that be to make up the slack. Mm-hmm. And if you conduct yourself in a way that it prevents this from happening, it's a lot less hassle. And I've had to do it. It is not fun, and you're poor for weeks. Because someone stole all your money.
And it can affect your credit for years.
Yeah, yeah. Depending on what happens, it can affect your credit for a very long time.
I like to look at it this way. When you go home at night, you lock your doors, you pull the blinds on your windows, and you expect to be private in your own home. People don't take that same attitude with browsing the internet, unfortunately. So you should take that same attitude when you browse the internet. Do your best to maintain your privacy. Yeah.
There's a wild west out there of trolls and hackers and governments that can and will use your information against you. So do your best to protect yourself.
I think with that, we're going to say adieu. So thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode.
Yeah. Thank you, Colin, for coming in.
Yes. No, it was great having
you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And we may have you come again for some of the other, perhaps more fun episodes. This one was a little bit more informational than our, certainly than lately in our last few episodes. So, but we're happy to be back, and we're going to continue kind of moving along and getting these out at least on a monthly basis. And
ish.
We're going to try.
That's a timeline. Come on.
And we're really going to do...
6 weeks.
Yep. We're going to be doing our best to get these connected to iTunes.
We've been saying that for months.
We have been saying that for a very long time. But we're really going to make an effort this time around. So hopefully this episode, hopefully, or at least next episode, is going to be on iTunes. So thank you all for listening, and we hope that you have a great day.